This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, that's where we got to go right now to bring on our guy, one of my favorites, ESPN NFL reporter Sal Palantonio. And Sal, before we get to the football stuff, I want to wish you a happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service, and a happy Veterans Day to all the vets out there, all of the sacrifices that they make to keep our country safe. What can you tell us about the SportsCenter special that you're doing with the Salute to Service with SportsCenter at 6:30 this evening?
Good evening, Chris and Mike, and thank you, Chris, for that sentiment. Listen, it was an honor to serve my country, and I know that every man and woman who served in the military has felt the same way. And I just want to say thank you and a shout-out to everybody listening to ESPN Radio on Armed Forces Radio all over the world. We're thinking about you, and we're thinking about your families who are making a sacrifice while you are out doing your job for our country. So thank you for that, Chris and Mike. Salute to Service was taped. A special was taped. It's airing 6:30 Eastern time, so about 30 minutes on ESPN. It features Booger McFarland, Michael Eaves, and others, including myself and ESPN President Jimmy Pitaro. We were at the Coast Guard Academy, spent several days with the Coast Guard, with the football team, with those folks who are learning how to be the young men and women who are going to be on the front lines of the Coast Guard. It's a beautiful facility and quite up to date in its technical proficiency. They threw me into the simulation trainer to drive a Coast Guard cutter in New York Harbor. So watch out for that. Now, I drove ships in the Indian Ocean at age 23, but there's a whole lot of beautiful ocean between you and the next bogey, the next target. So when you're trying to maneuver within New York Harbor, they give you one word of advice. Don't run into anything. It was interesting. It was a lot of fun.
I can imagine. Listen, if I trust anyone's judgment in that situation, it's going to be you, Sal Pal. So I have no doubt you navigated the hell out of those waters here. And we are encouraging everyone, again, to check that out. 6:30 Eastern, the SportsCenter Salute to Service special that Sal Pal and so many others are on. And again, to echo what Chris said, a big thank you to all of the men and women, all of the veterans of the armed forces here who have done so much to protect this country. Now, Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Sal Palantonio, who is also an ESPN NFL reporter for us now. And so, Sal Pal, we'd be remiss if we didn't get your reaction to the news of the day here. Odell Beckham Jr. heading out to the Los Angeles Rams. Was there any part of you surprised that this was ultimately where he landed?
Michael, in preparation for this show, I put together a little brain tease for you and Chris to answer your question. You ready for this? Here it comes.
Let's go.
What do these four highly accomplished people have in common? Michael Jordan, Mean Joe Green, Mick Jagger, and Jerry Seinfeld.
Ooh.
Now, all of them have the letter J in their name, but these are all people that Sean McVay did not bring to the Rams in his desperate attempt to win a Super Bowl.
Surprisingly so at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I love the fact that they're all in all of the time. Now, if you're a paying customer of the Los Angeles Rams, you're thinking, okay, sign me up for this show. This is great. They bring in Von Miller to go with Sam Darnold and Jalen Ramsey. They bring in DeSean Jackson, cut him, and they bring in, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. to go with Kupp and Woods and Higby and Matthew Stafford. So I look at it this way. Sean McVay is looking at the NFC, right? And the NFC is an arms race right now to see who's going to get first seed, home field, get that first seed in the NFC. It's the Bucs. It's Arizona. It is the Packers. And it is the Rams. To me, those are the four teams. So if I'm Sean McVay, I'm thinking, okay, I have a leading passer in the NFL, Matthew Stafford. He's also the leading passer on third down. He's also the leading passer on fourth quarter. in the fourth quarter. So I'm going to take a flyer on Odell Beckham Jr. for a year, make sure I have an insurance policy at the wide receiver position, develop some chemistry between Stafford and Odell Beckham Jr. for the long term, so that maybe in late December and early January and into the playoffs, they got it together and they're making beautiful music out there.
Sal, staying with those NFC powers, Aaron Rodgers' status for Sunday against Seattle is still yet to be determined, although Matt LaFleur said he's been involved with the game plan, he's been engaged, there's been a lot of back and forth. Do you expect Aaron Rodgers to play on Sunday? And if he does, what version of him do you expect to see?
Yeah, those are the two biggest questions, and I'm not covering the team in Green Bay. I'm actually in Philly getting ready to tape the matchup show at NFL Films tomorrow morning for this week. And here's the bottom line, Chris. We just don't know the answer to that, and that's the sad thing about what has happened in the Aaron Rodgers situation. Now, Troy Vincent, Dr. Alan Sills, D. Morris, they put together a program to, one, keep players healthy and on the field, and two, keep the games going at a high level. And, you know, the situation with Rodgers now, it's a great unknown as far as the Packers, because I go back and I look at the Packers, and we studied them a lot on the matchup show. And his ability to extend plays, to throw receivers open, his ability to manage the pocket, and manage the offense, especially on third down and in the fourth quarter, especially in that game against Arizona on the road without Devontae Adams, said to me, Chris, this guy's ready to run the table. Mm. They're looking to have the NFC Championship game in Green Bay again. They don't want to go on the road. They want it to be Ice Station Zebra in January and have the Bucks or the Rams come up there again. That's what that was all about. They were ready to run the table. I'm looking at them on film, and the guy was like, he was Obi-Wan Kenobi. He had the lightsaber out. He was carving people up effortlessly. And then this happens and derails the whole thing. So it's sad for the team, and I don't know where it's headed, frankly. It's one of the great unknowns, and maybe that's why you have the Rams just say, you know what, this is our moment. We got to seize it. Let's go back-to-back. Let's have NFC Championship game and Super Bowl in L.A. And that's what the Rams are thinking, and Arizona. And, of course, you know TB12. What does he want? He doesn't want to leave the house. He wants that. He wants a home field. He wants to stay in Tampa, get that home cooking. He was on the road all last year until he had the Super Bowl in Tampa. He wants to have it at home. So that's where we are in the NFC.
The NFC playoff picture, no doubt going to be a crowded one here, and no doubt in the driver's seat for the NFL overall when you talk about the power players in the league right now as we head into what should be a really exciting second half of the season for all the reasons that Sal Pal just described. Sir, we appreciate you joining us as always. Happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service and all that you've done, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Michael, thank you very much. Chris, you're the man. I'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Sal Palantonio, our ESPN NFL reporter and proud Navy veteran, who you can catch later on today, 6:30 Eastern, on the SportsCenter Salute to Service special that he mentioned. Michael Eaves, Kelsey Riggs, so many of our friends and colleagues around here, along with Sal Pal and the folks over at the Coast Guard. Going to be a really, really awesome to see the hard work that goes into the people protecting our lives and protecting our freedoms on a daily basis. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Get in touch with us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. We want to hear your reaction to Cam Newton and Odell Beckham Jr. signing with their new teams today in Carolina and Los Angeles, respectively. We'll get back to that big news of the day next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We've been reacting to the news of the day, which is OBJ deciding that he wants to be a member of the Los Angeles Rams. They are finalizing a deal where OBJ is going to join one of the most explosive offenses in the National Football League And, Mike, that seemingly has overshadowed the news that we got earlier in the day that Cam Newton is reuniting with the Carolina Panthers to become their starting quarterback for the rest of the season. So a lot going on a Thursday ahead of Thursday night football between the Ravens and the Dolphins. But which one of the moves do you like the most in terms of the Beckham move or the Cam Newton move?
Well, I think just based on the price tag, the Odell Beckham Jr. move makes a ton more sense here. Like, Cam Newton going back to Carolina, Chris, if this was just purely football competitive stuff, would make a ton of sense to me here, because it's also a good indicator. You have decided you're not going to let the sunk cost of $19 million next year for Sam Darnold defer you from doing the right thing, moving on and figuring out the next step. This also has the double bonus of trying to salvage this season as best you can, but we heard from Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, $4.5 million guaranteed for Cam Newton right now, who you were bidding against presumably no one in this situation. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, so I got to give the edge to the low-risk, high-reward OBJ sign.
Yeah, I feel you on that one, but in terms of being able to accomplish their ultimate objective, I feel like the Carolina Panthers are probably going to have the edge when it comes to the two moves that were made today, just because Carolina is eyeballing that last wild card spot in the NFC, and they're looking at the Atlanta Falcons, who are holding on to it right now, a team that they beat a couple of weeks ago with Sam Darnold as their quarterback, throwing for less than 130 yards. And they're saying to themselves, if Cam Newton can step in and at least give us competent quarterback play comparable to what we saw from him in New England last year, with the defense that they have and the skill position players that they have, there's no doubt in my mind the Carolina Panthers can be that seventh playoff team in the NFC.
They can find their way into the playoffs. I truly am with you on that, Chris. I think it's going to be interesting for Cam Newton how he adjusts to the offensive line that he's got now versus the one that he had the potential of playing behind in New England this year. That was a tight quarterback battle for a long time with that team. But, Chris, as surprising as that news was for Cam to go back to Carolina, considering this regime was the one that let him go, considering they spent money on Teddy Bridgewater and then on Sam Darnold, including draft picks, to come down here, the Odell Beckham Jr. one kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. We had heard the reports that the Green Bay Packers, the Kansas City Chiefs, the New Orleans Saints were in the market here. And apparently Sean McVay knew something the rest of us didn't hear. Because take a look at this. This was a Sean McVay press conference ahead of the Odell Beckham Jr. signing, where he is really trying his best to keep this thing together. Take a listen.
With Odell Beckham sort of extending his decision-making process, yeah, are you able to say whether you guys have reached out to him at all?
Yeah, we're just focused on the Niners right now. That's kind of where my focus is.
You just said your focus is on the 49ers, but can you enlighten us? Is Les Snead still possibly pursuing OBJ?
Les is always doing work behind the scenes. Like I said, I'm focused on the Niners right now, Gary. I mean, Gary's smiling at me. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, for anyone not watching on ESPN Plus or incapable of hearing the palpable joy in Sean McVay's voice in here, the transcripts that we get of these sounds that have them written down, all you see is big smile, laughs to himself, smiles and leaves press conference here. Chris, he was glowing at the podium knowing that he could get one over on the rest of us.
No question about it. And he knew that he had the inside track on a weapon that he had nothing comparable to on his roster. Like, that's the thing. When you start to peel back the layers and look at the actual move and how it translates to this offense and the X's and O's that Sean McVay dials up, they don't have a player like OBJ. Cooper Kupp, great receiver. He's playing at an all-pro level. Robert Woods, another highly productive receiver. Van Jefferson, he's the bigger of the three. But they don't have a guy as explosive as OBJ, just the raw physical talent. And so I'm curious to see how Sean McVay deploys him, because we know that this is a receiver at his best that can take the top off of a defense. And now the Rams actually have a quarterback that can take advantage of a deep threat like that with Matt Stafford. So I'm interested to see how it all works together and how Sean McVay orchestrates this thing. But they don't have a player on their skill position core quite like OBJ. So I'm really excited to see what the second half is going to bring for that Rams offense.
It's so interesting. Again, the parallels going down the second half of this season, not to any of the dream teams of the past, But to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that we saw last season, Chris, mentioned it before, you had a team that was already pretty talented on offense and just needed an upgrade at the quarterback position. Go out and get a key veteran quarterback in the offseason. Come over and add a bunch of name players during the year. Last year we talked about that with Leonard Fournette. We just had the Von Miller signing. They brought in a wide receiver in the middle of the season that they thought could be an even better weapon for their quarterback, a guy who had not been on the field for a while, was looking to get back into the swing of things. It was Antonio Brown for the Bucs. Now it's Odell Beckham Jr. for the Rams. And so we've seen this playbook before. We know how it can work on the top end, but we also know there were a lot of growing pains to get there for Tampa, and we've already seen some of that on display for the Rams too.
No question about it. And so that learning curve, Odell adjusting to the culture and adjusting to the offense that Sean McVay runs out there, it'll be interesting to see how quickly he can figure that piece of it out. But when it comes to comparing those two situations, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of parallels between last year's champs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and this year's team that has championship aspirations in the LA Rams. You saw what the Bucs were able to do, having the Super Bowl in their building. The Super Bowl is in SoFi Stadium, which is the home of the Rams. So, you know, we'll see if they can pull that off for a second consecutive year. But the one thing that I will say is, with Beckham, I fully expect to see the best version of him just because of what's at stake. Because if he can't make it work with the Rams, then it's going to have a hard time selling that he can be an asset to other teams around the National Football League at the pay scale that he's going to want to command in the 2022 offseason.
The no-excuse Rams are on deck. Let's go to the Goodyear hotline here. David in Buffalo. David, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call tonight, man. This kind of reminds me a lot of the Lakers back in the day when the Lakers brought in Gary Payton and Karl Malone with Shaq and Kobe. You know, you've got all the stars here. You've got all these great players. But will it gel? Will it work at the end of the day? Because team chemistry in the NFL is everything. I mean, to me, this is the Rams are all in. They're pushing the chips into the middle of the table, and it's now or never for McVay and this team if they're going to win it all.
You know what's interesting about that? We appreciate the call, Chris, is when everyone talks about team chemistry right now, we have seen a lot of these players have pre-existing relationships. Like, part of the Packers recruitment was Devontae Adams, was a guy who knew him from the combine. Like, this is a day and age where athletes have never been more connected during that process that gets to this point. So Odell's probably walking into that locker room. I mean, hell, we saw him post on Instagram, Von Miller as well, pictures with each other, guys they train with in the offseason. Von Miller a while ago shooting his shot saying, come to Los Angeles and win a ring with us. And so I think a lot of those relationships can sort of help in this process of getting guys more up to speed in the locker rooms.
Oh, yeah, and you've got to know that Beckham has relationships with the guys in the Rams locker room because he spends a lot of his time in the offseason in L.A. So it just seems like it makes sense from a chemistry fit, but also a lifestyle fit. And we heard from Adam Schefter that that was something that Beckham clearly prioritized along with being a part of a winning culture. So it seems like the stars have aligned, no pun intended, for Beckham to run with the Rams in the second half of the season and see where it goes. But in terms of being able to find a better place to reestablish his value in the league, I don't know that there was necessarily a better fit. Like, I really like this fit. I know we speculated that the Kansas City Chiefs had a lot of upside because that offense had been sputtering, and he could be the one to help crack the code with them figuring that out. But just thinking about what the Rams could be offensively with that trio of receivers and Matt Stafford as the trigger man, I'm really excited to see when they're all on the field together what it could actually turn into.
The Rams are like me with leftover Halloween candy. Every time I think I'm done reaching back into the jar for more, I walk by and the end result is still the same. The Los Angeles Rams sign another marquee player with a very big name in Odell Beckham Jr. That's been the news of the day. Coming up next, though, as we get ready for Thursday Night Football, we've got more news about the Dolphins' ever-moving game of quarterback musical chairs. We'll tell you who sat down for the game tonight next on ESPN Radio.
GJ and Max.
Good morning. I listen to you guys every single morning.
Covering the biggest stories with the best guests and plenty of opinions.
I love listening to you guys. I love the banter. I love the conversation. There's new life every single morning.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2. This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, And Gojo, we got a matchup on Thursday Night Football that's going to feature some fireworks from your guy, Lamar Jackson. You and I both have him as the guy that should be in the pole position for the MVP award at the end of this season. But usually playing down in South Florida results in good things for him and good things for the Baltimore Ravens. But there's a team on the other side of this matchup whose quarterback situation is not as settled with the Miami Dolphins, and knowing that, you know, Tua is or isn't their guy long term. We still haven't gotten any kind of inclination on which way the organization is leaning, but it's still a question mark at the second half of year two for a guy that was a top five pick, and that has to be concerning if you're a Dolphins fan.
It does have to be concerning, and unfortunately to that end, you're not going to get many more answers on that tonight. According to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter, Miami quarterback Jacoby Brissett is going to make his second consecutive start tonight against the Ravens. Tua Tagovailoa, who has a fracture on the middle finger of his left hand, will serve as the backup quarterback. And Chris, I know this for the Dolphins is about finding the best way to win at this point. Like, you're sitting here at 2-7. We had all that conversation around the trade deadline potentially about Deshaun. So clearly this is a desperate team. But I don't understand the notion of Tua being out injured and being the backup going into the game tonight. That seems like an unnecessary risk and sort of defeating the purpose of not starting him at all.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to be in uniform, if he's going to be active, then you would think that you would give him an opportunity to be the starter, just knowing how many games the guy's already missed already, right? For the Dolphins, this is not about trying to win this season, but this is about trying to evaluate whether or not Tua's your guy. And so to miss an opportunity to get another game, another chance to evaluate what he brings to the table just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because you're one hit away from Tua having to be thrust into action. And then, you know, what are you ultimately going to end up doing? How can you justify the fact that he's available to play but just not to start? I think that's an interesting position for Brian Flores and general manager Chris Greer to be in. You know, you think about the opportunities that Tua has missed since they drafted him. I mean, you're talking about the Dolphins playing 26 total games since they drafted Tua, including tonight, and he would have missed 11 of them. I'm not quite sure why you would have him in uniform, but not give him the opportunity to start and the opportunity to play. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it seems bizarre, and we've talked about this a lot, Chris, relative to the situation with the New York Jets and the decisions that they're going to have to make at quarterback here, about Mike White, about how it relates to Zach Wilson, and the health of a guy you invested a number two overall pick in. But that's his first season. We know Zach Wilson's going to have an opportunity beyond this year based off that price tag. For Tua Tagovailoa, this has felt a little bit more dire. He clearly sounded like a guy around the trade deadline who understood that he wasn't necessarily on the firmest ground with this Miami Dolphins organization. And I don't know why, Chris, you wouldn't be absolutely sure at this point. This sort of half measure at the quarterback position is, I think, why more and more people are starting to look at Chris Greer, their GM, and even at Brian Flores, their head coach, and wonder, all right, for a team and an organization that seem to have a plan going towards that tank for Tua model, how they're actually going to execute this now, because so far they really haven't stuck to landing on this thing.
No, they haven't. And when you look at some of the players that they let walk out of that organization, it just, you have to scratch your head and you wonder whether or not the team would be better off had they held on to him. I mean, Laramie Tunzel is one of the best tackles in all of football, and yet they decided that they were going to move on from him. Now, they got a bevy of draft picks for him, but when you look at what they used those draft picks on, it hadn't necessarily translated into finding players that can contribute to your team winning and establishing your new head coach's program. Same could be said for Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's one of the best safeties in all of football. Yeah, you got a couple of first-round picks for it,
yep.
But does that translate into, you know, having the kind of success that you're looking for when you look at the players that Chris Greer has used to that's drafted with those picks? So you have to question everything that Chris Greer is doing in terms of his formula for success and his formula for being able to consistently have a winner down there in Miami and give head coach Brian Flores the groceries that he needs in order to be able to have a winning team. And right now, I just can't say that I have any confidence in what Chris Greer is doing, his strategy overall, and that's putting their head coach in a really tough spot.
Yeah, he's had 13 top 90 draft picks in the last three seasons, and we know Tua Tagovailoa was a huge part of that planning process for all them, but they have swung with high draft capital on a lot of young O-linemen that have translated into one of the worst offensive lines in the league that we've seen. And it's undermined everything else they've tried to do. They've spent big in the defensive secondary in a way that hasn't paid off for them so far. And Chris, as we compare that with teams around football, like the Baltimore Ravens that they're getting ready to face tonight, like Josh Allen's Buffalo Bills, hell, even like Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns, who have built sustainable footing for their young quarterbacks to thrive on here, at some point, the failure of Tua Tagovailoa is going to be a stink that reflects back on those two in a way that I think Brian Flores is going to have time to recover from. He got brought down there on a contract with extra years, understanding they had a lot of rebuilding to do. But at some point, like you mentioned, you're going to have to look at what you're handing him and ask a question about the guy buying him.
No question about it. Even going back to the decision to draft Tua over Justin Herbert, that is something that falls at the feet of the general manager, Chris Greer. And Tua is a guy that had a sketchy injury history coming into the National Football League. He was recovering from a major hip surgery when they drafted him. So you have to question a guy that has, you know, a sketchy medical situation, and you draft him, and in your first couple of years, he's dealing with multiple injuries. So this is on the general manager. I don't know that I can lay this at the feet of Brian Flores. He's shown his ability to be a really good coach. It felt like early on in his tenure that the players were buying in, but now it's getting to a point where you have to wonder, what are the program building blocks? What are the cornerstone players for the franchise? And right now, you just don't have enough of those guys in order for Brian Flores to be competitive in the AFC East.
So that's what we've got to look forward to on Thursday Night Football tonight, as again, the Miami Dolphins going to be starting Jacoby Brissett at quarterback with Tua Tagovailoa and his injured finger dressed as the backup against the Baltimore Ravens. Coming up next, though, we've talked about Miami, we've talked about Carolina, we've talked about Los Angeles, but we got to finish off the show with a tribute to Cliffadelphia here. It's about one final John coming up next here on Canty and Golic Jr.
ESPN Radio celebrates Veterans Day.
I'm Ben Roethlisberger, quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I just want to send a big, happy Veterans Day to all the veterans, the people that have served this country to give us all the amazing freedoms that we have. We love you and thank you for everything that you've done.
Celebrating veterans, past and present, on ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests joined us via the Goodyear Hotline, and we got to give a shout-out to all the guests that came through on our show. ESPN NBA analyst Monica McNutt breaking down what she saw last night from the Pistons and Rockets and everything else that's all around the NBA. Adam Schefter giving us the breaking news on OBJ and breaking down how that deal came together. Also got to give a shout-out to Sal Powell for joining us, being able to talk to us a little bit about what ESPN is doing with their special for veterans tonight on SportsCenter. And then also Stanford Steve trying to get your pockets right, get your money right, ready for the college football weekend as well as Thursday Night Football. But Gojo, we have reached the point in the show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Three and Out here on Canty and Golic Jr. We'll breeze through these so we can get to the important one here at the end here. First off, we got to celebrate our good friend Julia Hawkins. And I say our good friend, we don't know this woman at all, but I'd like to be friends with her because she knows that speed kills. Julia Hawkins set a world record in the 100-meter dash in her age division. The 105-year-old Julia Hawkins completed the 100-meter dash in just over a minute, becoming the first woman 105 or older to run the event, according to the National Senior Games Association. Chris, if I can look up straight, if I am not 6 feet under dirt at 105, let alone running 100 meters, I consider that a colossal success.
I'm telling you, man, Julia Hawkins got a great contract and a great lease on life. If she's out here running 100-meter dashes at 105 years old, God bless her. That is absolutely spectacular. Gojo, I just turned 39, and I have no aspirations to run a 100-meter dash. And I'm not sure that I could actually beat Julia Hawkins' time if I decided that I was going to do it. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. Salute to her for doing that. That's really impressive.
You know what? She's running from the competition, by the way, because she's got someone chasing on her. She set the world record for the 100-meter and 50-meter events in the 100 to 104 age range back in 2017. That record for the 100-meter no longer stands. Diane Friedman, 100 years old, beat that record in September, so we are 5 years away from Diane having to run this back and see if our friend Julia Hawkins wants parts on that. So we got a bunch of 100-year-olds racing out here. It is wild stuff on Canty and Golic Jr. That being said, I don't know if it's this wild. Three and out here. A hiker was lost on a mountain for 24 hours and ignored calls from rescue crews because he didn't recognize the phone numbers, according to officials here.
This is me. This is me. If I see a number that I don't recognize, I'm not going to answer.
Oh, listen, I'm 100% with you, man. Like, I do that in my regular life. But you're lost in the mountains.
That's the whole point. How could you not pick up the phone if you're lost? People are trying to find you. People are trying to help you. You're the one that went astray on the mountainside. They're trying to come to your rescue, and you're not going to pick up the phone? What part of the game is that? It makes no sense. Matter of fact, Gojo, you know what? You deserve to be lost. If you're not going to pick up the phone when you know you're lost and there are people trying to help you, you deserve to be lost.
This is an incredible quote from officials surrounding this event here, commenting after this. They said, one notable takeaway is that the subject ignored repeated phone calls from us because they didn't recognize the number. If you're overdue according to your itinerary and you start getting repeated calls from an unknown number, please answer the phone. And I'll finish that for them because we don't want to have to come pick up your body later on. Like, do the right thing in here. This is like the modern day version of that Bible parable where people always talk about, I was sitting there in the middle of the hurricane, and then someone came by in a boat, and I said, nah, God's got me. And someone came by in a helicopter and said, nah, God's got me. And then I got to heaven and said, God, what the hell? And he said, I sent that boat in the helicopter for you here. Like, we've been calling. Pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and one of our other dear friends around here, because for the last part of Three and Out here, we have one final John here. Our producer, Cliff, who you guys, if you've been around this show, if you've been around Golic and Wingo beforehand and heard some great song on the radio, heard a take about Philadelphia sports, or heard a truly outlandish take about sports in general, it has probably come from our producer, Cliff. It is his last day with us here at ESPN here. We're all going to miss Cliff a hell of a lot. He has been a part of this crew for a long time here, going on to bigger and better things here. We know this is probably one of those situations where we say, excited to announce what I'm getting into coming up in just a little bit. Am I right, Cliff?
You might be right on that, but we'll hold off on that for a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. So Cliff has also been the architect of a segment called Good John, Bad John around here. Cliff, I don't know if you've had time to concoct maybe your final Johns. Your top three Johns.
Can you finally get the terminology right, though, and just recognize like what Johns is? It's not, you can't say final Johns, bro.
It's your last Johns.
All right. Just for time's sake, I'll give you the top three Philadelphia sports moments, okay?
All right. Top three Johns.
Number three.
AI, game one. 2001 NBA Finals, 48 points, overtime victory versus Lakers. Even though they got swept, or they lost in five, AI still balled the hell out, and that's why I became a major AI fan. Number two. 2003 Phillies World Series victory. That ended a 25-year Philadelphia drought for sports championships in the four major sports. That was a crazy moment. Brad Lynch closed the game out. Phillies beat the Rays in five. And the number one. Actually ties into my all-time favorite ESPN moment is the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. And I went home and I was at the parade. And we were at the parade. We did live hits with my friends in the background, acting a fool, and I don't remember the rest of that day.
Yeah, no, I remember those hits, Cliff, and we could tell none of you and your friends were going to remember the rest of that day.
Yeah, too much Henny, too much Wawa, too much everything that day. It was crazy, but that was my favorite ESPN moment, favorite sports moment ever.
That's a good job.
It was incredible,
That's a
man.
Good job.
And yeah. Thank y'all for everything, now, for real. It's been all love here. I'm going to miss y'all. Miss work with y'all every single day, but it's all love, man.
Cliff, I'm just hoping that we real friends and not just work friends. Oh. The number still works, bro. Just so you know.
We going to Dykeman, right?
You already know.
There we go.
10 seconds, yo.
Cliff, we appreciate you. We love you, man. You've been a great friend and coworker around here. We know that first part's going to continue long after you walk out the door here. Best of luck to you. Best of luck with everyone. You got to hang out with Spain and Fitz next.